Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and I am back again with Dom. Dom, we're here to talk some more BB19. How pumped are you?
I am thrilled. Less so about BB19 than just getting to podcast with the two of you, but I can work out some excitement over the course of the show, I'm
sure. All right. Yeah, well, as Dom has mentioned, we are not alone today. We have a very special guest that has been on with us at the beginning of the BB19 season, and now she is back to help us wrap all of this up and try to figure out what the hell we just watched. Welcome back, the new co-host of the RHAP B&B over on Reality TV Rehap Ups, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm good. I really thought that you were joking me and that we were going to be talking about, I don't know, Australian Survivor or the new season of Survivor.
If you would rather talk about that, we can. But
now, just watch this podcast like shift themes like 10 minutes in. No, it's okay. We'll like find the time machine and, you know, when you release this, the podcast will be relevant because we'll have time traveled. So it's fine.
Thank you for joining us for every single one of our BB19 podcasts. So basically, the feedback I'm hearing from RHAP B&B, do we need to issue the warning that we've only ever given once with Johnny Fairplay of if you have young kids in the car, if you have a sensitive disposition, do we need to put like a PG-13 rating on this? We are a family-friendly show, Liana.
How dare you?
If
you haven't listened to the B&B this week, it got a little intense. There were some talk of crotches and, you know, it's all good though.
Yeah, you know you're doing well when Mike Bloom is not the one furthest out there.
Yeah, there have been lots of exposed parties this season. We'll try to keep that to a minimum for now. But hey, it's your show as well, so do whatever you want.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, we don't want that hashtag Dom and Colin Expose party trending this year.
Yeah, not yet, at least. Liana, I mean, you bring up a good point, though, which is both Dom and I, we're not very big on BB19 as this was airing, and I think it really is just because of this finals twist that we, you know, Paul losing in the finals, that we even really want to come back here and feel like we even have anything worth talking about, honestly. But you were someone who covered this whole season intermittently over on RHAP as part of one of the regulars on the morning updates and elsewhere. What was just your general takeaway as we just kind of dive into this big crazy ending on finale night? Were you surprised by this, or did you think that Josh actually had a real chance?
Well, I mean, I think like that exactly like you said, the reason why there was more talk and kind of more excitement about the end of the season is because we all thought it was a done deal. We thought Paul was going to win for sure. And so the fact that Josh was able to win, you know, even 5-4, like that was amazing. And I think that's kind of the reason why we're all like, oh, wait, we'll say what? Because now it seems like there are real takeaways as far as strategy goes. With this season, I mean, you know, jury management has always been a thing. Like we've always talked about it, but I think in the situation of, let's say, when Dan lost to Ian, you know, we just kind of assumed like, okay, that was a done deal. There's nothing really he could have done. Dan was going to lose no matter what. But here we have a situation where Paul actively lost himself the game, which is just astounding to me. I mean, I think that that really is the biggest takeaway, that you have someone like Josh who the jury didn't particularly like, but instead, because of Paul's horrible gameplay, you know, despite like him playing so well in earlier parts of the game, like he was able to turn the jury against himself and he lost himself this, you know, this final vote.
Yeah, as you say, a lot of fans are trying to draw parallels with the Dan and Ian example, which is still at the forefront of people's minds. And of course, recently in Survivor, you have the whole Michelle versus Aubrey controversy, which is still raging on after all this time. And you can question how much there is to get out of any one of those comparisons. But when do you think this actually turned around for Paul? When did it go from being kind of a locked in thing that Paul was going to win? He was going to be, we're going to have this Paul coronation and then all the postseason analysis is going to be, where does Paul stack up among like Derek and everyone else? When did that turn into Paul is going to lose and he doesn't see it coming yet?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good question, because I think it really wasn't until maybe a week before the finale. So I remember after seeing the jury segment when, you know, Alex comes into the house and you have this like final group of jurors and you're kind of getting this sense that like maybe things are turning against Paul. And we had discussed this so much, you know, on the morning updates, right? It's like a 24-hour news cycle. You got a lot of time to kill. But shout out to Taryn. Great job, Taryn. Anyway, so
that guy is truly not human, by the way, doing like 80 consecutive days of Big Brother podcast.
Yeah, I don't know how you do this for a good season. When it's with BB19, that's a chore you have to sit through.
Yeah, he is literally a robot. Like, he did prove that to us this season. Anyway, so I really think it was that jury segment when we kind of started to get these hints of, okay, maybe we could see Mark and Elena and Jason and Alex all vote against Paul. And if they're able to pull Cody in there, you know, then that becomes a 5-4 vote split, which is exactly what we saw. So I think that I started to see the signs. But of course, you know, you want to be a little bullish because we're in Big Brother, we're used to seeing the live feeds. And we know how the show can edit things to make things seem differently, right? Like, oh, Alex was this lovable character. Like, sure show. Right. And so with the jury house, like, we saw almost the same thing where it was like, okay, well, you know, we're starting to see these seeds of doubt in some of the jurors' minds, but it might not necessarily, you know, hold true because this is something that's edited together.
Yeah, I know lots of people were saying they would rather have live feeds of the jury house this season than the live feeds of the Big Brother house. And there were these murmurs in the week before the finale that I think there was this Alison Grodner interview where she said the jury was very bitter against Paul. And then Julie seemed to be kind of implicitly confirming that. And we saw in the jury segment, it actually seemed not that bad for Paul. It seemed like he was going to be in a pretty good spot going in. But maybe that was masking a lot of animosity that Paul would have to do something to correct in the last week. And he just didn't.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, what we talked about with Paul not owning his game, you know, that Paul just continued through his goodbye messages to just say, oh, my gosh, you know, when Kevin, for example, was evicted, you know, he should have just owned his game in that sense. I mean, Kevin ended up voting for him, but this is just a good example where, you know, he was just, oh, my gosh, Christmas went rogue, your boy, you know, blah, 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 whatever. It's like, no, dude, like, we all know what's happening. And I think that's what happened in the jury house. There are all these people who were snowed by Paul and he, you know, he didn't own his game. He didn't say, look, this is what's happening. And so when they're trying to get over this kind of betrayal, it takes a longer amount of time. And that happened in the jury house and they weren't over it by the time they voted.
And when your claim to win the season is that you were the dominant strategic player who was able to play everyone against each other, and then they all go to the jury house thinking, oh, well, Paul, you know, had no hand in my elimination. Well, either they're going to continue believing that and everyone's coming and saying the same thing. And it's, well, did you even have that much control in the first place? Or they start comparing notes and they think, this guy just thinks I'm an idiot. And he's not giving us the credit as jurors that we want to be able to give him credit for his own game.
Right. That's what it seemed like to me, is all the way down, not only through the goodbye messages, but down to his final plea in front of the jurors, he was continuing to try to sell them on things that he should obviously know they have compared notes on and are not going to fall for. It reminded me, honestly, a lot of like Dan and BB14 still trying to like schmooze his way to jury votes, even as it was very clear that that's not what they were responding well to. It seems like that has been pinpointed as like what Paul ended up doing wrong, is almost like overcommitting, I would say, to like Mark and Elena and Alex and Jason both. I think they got to the jury house and realized, oh, this guy never had any intention of actually going to the end with me. And especially when Josh is confirming that in all of their goodbye messages about like, oh, it's me, Paul, and Christmas all the way to the end. I feel like that is probably the correct place to be placing that blame, is lying needlessly to people. It really felt like the votes he lost, with the possible exception of like Alex and Cody, are people who would generally, I feel like, be okay with voting for someone who lied to them. But I think they felt like that he lied to them for almost no reason and almost like crossed the threshold of like disrespecting them.
Oh, well, no, I mean, I completely agree. I think that's the thing, is that he sort of crafted these two narratives. You know, one is that, oh, my gosh, this person, other person went rogue. It's definitely not my doing. And then the other story he was trying to sell was, look at, you know, my strategic genius and like how well I orchestrated everything. And so since those two things like just don't co-align, you know, you can't try to move forward with both, and you're going to have some disconnect.
Yeah, I think you saw this glimmer of desperation towards the end of Paul's arguments when he started just rattling off all of these statistics of, I won this many challenges and I masterminded all of these different innovations. And you got the sense that he was realizing, this is the argument I should have been making the whole time, not just in this jury segment, but before this in my my goodbye messages and just in the way I carried myself in the house, just owning the game that I was playing and not time. And obviously they're going to talk and compare notes. I think it's also worth talking quickly about Paul's tactics for keeping that tight control over his alliance, because we saw him, like, no one ever seemed to really deviate from him. Whenever anyone spoke out of turn, they became the next target. And whenever someone was the designated outcast of the week, it wasn't just, oh, well, you're no longer with us strategically, so we're not going to work with you. It's, we're going to like isolate you socially, physically, and so on within the house. And we're just not going to let you have any kind of enjoyment or self-worth in that last week. And so I think people went to the jury house feeling not just, oh, I got outplayed in the game, or I feel a bit of anger about that. It's, I have been like psychologically not tortured, but just they went to the jury house not in the best state of mind. And I think, Paul, you, if you're going to play that kind of game, you need to actively work to redress that at the end. And Paul just really did not do anything of the kind.
Was there maybe an element of feeling guilty about having treated the early jurors that way themselves? And like, Alex, it's finally her turn to get frozen out. And she says, oh, this sucks. I never should have put anyone through this in the first place. And now whoever's responsible for making all of this happen is the one who's, you know, killing the season.
Yeah, and I think
Alex with remorse. That's
well,
hilarious.
Whatever. Yeah, it's maybe a bad example. I was trying to think of someone who was very in on it when it was Cody getting frozen out, and then very hurt when it was her getting frozen out.
I would say like Mark and Elena maybe would be harder. Although they toward so my understanding is part of what led to them becoming some of the early targets within Paul's own alliance was them not being fully on board with freezing out Jess and Cody, and it was clear that they weren't just like going along with the show. So I think I think people who were contributing to that and then found themselves on the wrong end of it, like they don't want to admit, okay, well, I was doing this myself, I can't really be hypocritical about it. It's, I feel bad about having been part of this, so I'm going to deflect the blame onto the people higher up. And the person at the top of that chain for everyone, of course, by his own design, was Paul.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there are a couple points here. The first, you know, going back to Paul's kind of final jury speech, like he had that thing planned out with rattling off the statistics beforehand. I don't, you know, I do think that Paul deserves a lot of credit for the game that he played. And just because, you know, he had these missteps in the end and didn't end up winning, and it kind of becomes this story of his demise. Like he did, you know, like you said, like he was the top dog in the chain. He did, you know, play the hell out of this game, much like Crystal Cox. And so I do think that he deserves a lot of credit. But that being said, like his, like, I still can't get over how bad his final jury plea was, you know, because he didn't want to say, I won these many challenges, this is how I got to the end, you know, like, I'm amazing, blah, blah, blah. And you can just tell it's not connecting. And even though, you know, Josh messed up, which that even probably was to his benefit, that he showed he was human, you know, he showed that he had empathy. And so all of this bullying, you know, Josh, while he did partake in it, he did feel sorry. He did, you know, he felt remorse, and he was able to kind of own up to it. And so as far as like the quote unquote bullying, I think for some people, it definitely did, you know, make a difference. But I think ultimately the fact that, say, Mark and Elena were bullied and then, you know, sort of partook in the bullying, I don't think that was really necessarily, you know, why they felt so, you know, burned at the end of this game. I really do think that ultimately it was because, you know, Paul had lied to them about, you know, oh, I want to take you. Oh my gosh. Like, I can't believe you went home. It definitely wasn't by design.
Right. No, I think like, I know I'm the guy who always trashes Dan Giesling, but I think it's such an apt comparison where it seems that the jurors felt like, well, Dan, by their own admission, probably played a much better game than Ian did. The same, I don't think anyone would say, oh, Josh played a much better, like, strategic game than Paul did. I doubt many people on the jury are saying that, at least. They, I think, are saying to themselves, Dan/Paul spent the entire time that I was in the house pretending to be one of my closest allies and my best friend, and now having seen how this played out and seeing that he was doing that with that with everyone, it feels to me, having not seen anything from the outside world in months, like he was just being straight up duplicitous, like con man level, like just messing with me for his own benefit. And while Josh and Ian, while they weren't in there playing the world's best game of Big Brother, were at least being genuine and being true to themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a good point. I do think that both Dan and Paul kind of give off a little bit of that used car salesman vibe. Although I will say that I think it was an interview with Brittany at the end of 14, but she said that if Dan was up against anything, you know, a ketchup bottle, the ketchup bottle would have won. And I don't think that that same level of resentment was there towards Paul. I really do think that there were some opportunities for Paul to either win votes back, or if he wasn't just so actively like destroying his own game, like it really felt like this was Paul's to win and he was the one that messed it up. Well, where in the case of Dan, I feel like it was really just a done deal. There was no way that he was going to, you know, take away the victory.
Do we know why Paul has felt like he needed to exercise this level of control over the course of the entire season? Has he talked about why he didn't just play it a little slower and hopefully not irritate as many people in having to evict them? Or did he feel like, hey, it seems like I could have, you know, have every single one of these people be my puppets, why not do that?
No, I mean, really, from all of the postseason stuff, Paul has no idea why he lost. And he kind of is taking the same tact of, you know, never cared, whatever. But really, you know, and Rob, when Rob interviewed him in the backyard, it was right after he was, you know, lost. So obviously, you're not going to have some sort of like coming to terms moment with like how you played the game and how you lost the game. But it really seemed like Paul didn't understand. I mean, he was saying things like, you know, I did all I could do. I don't understand. You know, why didn't they vote for me? And so I think that he, you know, part of this is because maybe he, I mean, and again, credit where credit is due, he made it to the end twice. So he has never experienced the jury house. He's never really, I think, tried to explore why he lost last year. And so a part of that also was his bad jury management, even though it came, you know, came to the forefront this year. And so I think that he doesn't even consider, you know, oh, I wish I played this differently, or I wish I'd done this differently, because he just doesn't understand.
And when we make the Dan comparisons, it's easy to forget that Dan came into his second season having previously won a unanimous jury vote. He's someone who clearly understands, both on an abstract level and on a personal level, how to win over jurors and how to manage their expectations. And for a variety of reasons, he wasn't able to do that in his second season. But I think, as you said, this was Paul's game to win, whereas I think that was Dan's game to do whatever he could to try and stay in it, but in the process, alienating a lot of jurors to the point where they would never vote for him. So it was going to be, that was always going to be hard for him to overcome. Whereas for Paul, I think the tragedy or the hubris or whatever you want to call it is he had this set up. I think he could have flipped those one or two votes he would have needed had he just put some thought into how to manage a jury. And he has come out and said he didn't watch his first season. And given that him losing in the finals last season is the only reason he was invited back for this one, you would think there would be some kind of reflection there, some idea of, okay, if I make it to this stage again, what can I do better? But it felt like he never went through that kind of introspective process. And based on what you said, it sounds like he's not going through it again this time either.
That's what I was going to say is, will Paul ever watch either of his seasons at this point? And like, I was genuinely wondering, is Paul glad that he went on Big Brother?
Ooh, I don't know. I think, I mean, there are screenshots. My Twitter cover photo is the shot of Josh and Paul's faces when the final votes are read. Paul looks absolutely crushed.
Yeah.
Just so defeated. Which, you know, I guess I should be a nicer human being, but I'm not. It's
no, that's a, that's a perfect Twitter quote. That is Dom and Colin approved. Yeah, that is absolutely spot on.
I know some people said that was like Paul, that was showmanship on Paul's part, like expecting he was still going to win and wanting to show how much he actually cared, not never cared, before that was announced.
Forget
that's genuine to me. He was actually mortified that he realized what was happening to him yet again.
Well, I think the way it came about is because didn't the first like four out of the first five votes were for him, and he just needed one more, and then I think he started doing the math on whose keys were still in the box, and when it came down to 4-4 with only Cody in there, he was like ready to cry.
Yeah, well, first of all, he should have noticed that Julie started reading the votes backwards, which happened in the Liz Steve vote, just because, you know, that's a way to get the drama up, right? Because Liz was definitely going to lose, but the three votes for Liz were in those like first three or four keys or whatever.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's definitely what happened. And I think once he knew he lost Mark and Elaine, like once I think Mark's key was pulled first. Once Mark's key was pulled, I think then he knew he lost Elena, and then in turn probably lost Cody. So,
you could really see it. It seemed to me like at the beginning of the vote reading, he thought, okay, this is off to a good start. And then I think you're right. When he lost Mark, he said, okay, this is all going to come crashing down on me again. And you could watch him come to that realization in real time. It was I think like one of the most maybe the only genuine moment we saw out of Paul all season.
Yeah, no, actually that's very true. This is him really, you know, oh my goodness, he's so crushed. I'm sorry for laughing, but it's hilarious.
I hadn't considered this before, but like, why would we think after watching this guy play the way that he did that he's not just attempting to do the same thing with America too, and just kind of play us for whatever he wants us to think? Like, I genuinely believe that actually seeing Paul get emotional there was one of the few times over the course of both of his seasons that I can remember like actually feeling like, okay, that is 100% how this guy is actually feeling right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting that you bring it up, because we definitely talked about this with regards to, you know, Derek, for example, who there were a lot of people who, and myself included, were just like, own your game, man. Like, just tell us what you're doing. But he really did seem to, whether or not he was playing America or playing the producers, because there's some conspiracy theories about, oh, okay, if you expose things to the producers, they'll ask specific targeted questions to other people, you know, about, say, your strategy or whatever. But anyway, and so I think that Paul kind of putting up this front to America is pretty apt. I could definitely see it. You know, he's trying to come in with his catchphrases. He's trying to build his brand. I mean, he does own a clothing company. And I think that part of him coming on the show is he got this really big boost the first time he was on. And I think that he was hoping kind of for a similar thing again. So, and, you know, he wasn't the only one. I mean, a lot of the house guests this season talked about boosting their Instagram followers. Or Christmas, I remember the first night of the feeds, she just kept promoting her book. And it was funny because the cameras would be on her and then she'd start talking about her book and they'd immediately cut away. It was beautiful.
I remember that. Now that you mentioned that, yeah. That was like the one of two nights of feeds that I watched this summer.
Yeah. So, very proud of you. But yeah, no, I could definitely see that Paul was kind of playing America. And so to have him kind of break down like this, oh, this is Paul actually being Paul and kind of exposing some of his true feelings.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel like, if at all, Paul this season is going to impact people on future seasons and how they play?
Well, they'll have to watch the season.
Right. Yeah,
Paul.
That's the thing is I don't know how many of them are going to know about the saga of Paul on BB19. But the people who do, like the fans, are we going to start seeing, I think potentially like more people in the goodbye messages? I know got Josh a lot of credit about owning, you know, not only just owning what he was doing, but going out of his way to say, hey, Paul's been with me the whole time and sorry that you were the latest victim of that. Do you think we're going to see more straightforward goodbye messages or just anything along the people being less inclined to want to try to control the entire house or any just kind of lasting impact of seeing Paul's game go, you know, turned on its head?
Yeah. So, you know, when we talk about what are the takeaways of the season, what is the season going to be remembered for? And I think this, much like BBOTT, you know, ugh, good thing that's over. But it is this story of how Yvette was able to come in and dominate the game so strongly, but still ultimately lose because of this, you know, poor jury management, this not being able to own the game, the bad goodbye messages. And I think really Josh sort of in contrast to Paul's goodbye messages, I think that that was not necessarily a direct result of Josh being up on his strategy. I think it just kind of hammered home the point of how bad Paul was. Like, I don't think this is going to be a story about how you can bang pots and pans and still win the game.
Right.
You know, this is, which, you know, I guess that's BB-8, but it is how Paul just so poorly mismanaged everything. And I think that is the major takeaway of the season. So if there are fans who are watching, you know, that's what you remember. And especially because Big Brother seasons are so long and this happened right at the end. It was just this, you know, twist ending that I think is really going to stick with you. You know, I know M. Night Shyamalan didn't direct this, but it really is the thing that stands out, that Paul just screwed up his game so badly.
Actually, Big Brother, the franchise, BBUS is kind of like M. Night Shyamalan's career, where it starts out really hot, other than BB1. And like, you get off to a really great start with like The Sixth Sense and Signs and things like that, and then it just goes completely off the deep end about a third of the way through.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah. My gosh, Signs.
I guess inversely, do you feel like Josh, maybe not, I think I'm probably being misguided and feeling like the goodbye message thing was an actual active, like, strategic effort on his part. But I think Josh, while he was banging pots and pans, did come across as pretty genuine and not out there to be like a huge schemer or big strategic player, frankly, within the game. For the people who have watched this season that appear on future seasons, will there be a movement to be more like Josh, both within the game and just as a TV character? Do you feel like this big, goofy loudmouth actually now people are going to feel like is a type of player in Big Brother who could have success?
I sure hope not. Or I feel bad for those people. No, I mean, I think, look, again, if you have somebody who is a fan who is following this season, And you look back on the way that Josh played, he was pretty bad. Like, he really didn't make it to the end because of his own agency. Like, he was there because Paul brought him to the end. Like, that's why Josh ended up going so far. And I think that there is a tendency to want to do this revisionist history of, oh, well, you know, Josh really intended to do all this. And like, he was doing this on purpose. No, if you go back, and I did we did on RHAP the kind of final retrospectives of this is Christmas's, Josh's, and Paul's game throughout the season, and I did Josh, and looking back on Josh's game, he was really a terrible player. Like, he is gonna fall, I think, in the lower rankings of winners ultimately when the LFC do their rankings, and I don't think that there are sort of any lessons to be taken away from Josh's game. I think, again, if anything, it all goes back to that, you know, the goodbye message strategy. I don't think that anybody is going to say, oh, okay, if I come in and I call people a meatball and I antagonize people, that'll get me the win. I really don't think that that's going to stand out as a viable game strategy.
Yeah, I totally agree about Josh, just where his place in history will end up being. I think this is beyond like the Fabio or Bob territory that we talk about with Survivor, of like people who just kind of fluked their way to victory. Like you're saying, Josh, as far as I can tell, did pretty much nothing to actually earn himself a win as far as like actively thinking about, okay, what would my best move be? It seems like he really was just in there to be a big character and just be himself and have fun. And if it goes well, it goes well. And congrats to him that it went well. But the idea that because player X won, they by definition played the best game of the season continues to be complete insanity. And I would say Josh would be, other than the people who I would classify as Dick, Rachel, and Jordan, who won solely because of production interference, I would say Josh is the bottom of the list apart from those three.
Yeah, the thing that always gets me about the like the Fabio and Bob comparisons is that they had the people on the jury who were rooting for them. Like, they knew if I can just win out and get to the end, however hard that might be, I can be pretty sure I'm going to win when I get there. Josh, it seemed like no one was even rooting that hard for Josh. It was more rooting against Paul. And I think that's the tone that has characterized a lot of the debates of, is Josh actually a good winner? Is Paul actually a good player? There seems to be this idea that you have to pick a side, and if you're anti-Josh, you must be pro-Paul, and vice versa. I think you can say that both of them, I don't know if you would call Paul's game bad, because some parts of it were very good, but then this fundamental aspect of it was completely lacking. So how do you even square that up? Whereas Josh, as I was getting ready for this finale, it seemed like this outcome might actually come into play, and it was going to be absolutely exquisite. The one reservation I had was, well, surely now there were going to be these people saying, well, Josh knew what he was doing the whole time. This was planned weeks in advance. And actually, if you look back to the start of the season, he did this right and this right. And I knew it was going to be incredibly frustrating. So as expected, that those people are now saying those things. And it's like, this debate is never going to end, I think. And in Big Brother 25, when someone else loses to someone else in the same circumstances, it's just going to be the same thing all over again.
Yeah.
First of all, how dare you, of accusing Big Brother fans of being petty.
Yeah, well, Liana, to go back to, I asked you this at the top of the show about just how surprised you were about Josh even being in there with a chance at winning. But as someone who really just watched the TV episodes and listened to a ton of the RHAP podcast, but wasn't following the day-to-day minutia very closely, I would just get the big headlines from each day. I know over the course of even from the beginning, and I don't think he ever wavered from it, Brent Wolgamott was saying Josh has a chance to win if he can end up making it there. And then as it looked more and more likely that Josh was going to be in there in the end, I know Brent entering the finale, I believe he was calling Josh winning 5-4 over Paul if it came down to that. And just because of Brent, I actually was very entering this finale, I thought it was almost more likely than not that Josh would beat Paul if it came down to the two of them, because I had really gotten the vibe from like Alex and Jason as they walked out the door, and then Elena as she was in the jury house and talking to Dr. Will, like they were really, really mad at Paul. So I want to just, I guess, first of all, thank Brent for getting me in the more correct state of mind. But Dom, were you on to any of this? Did you feel like Josh was actually in there with a chance, just being a more casual follower than the people who were tracking every single thing that went on?
I definitely had this sense of foreboding. Like, if Paul does end up winning, it's going to feel almost too easy. Like, there's got to be a catch, right? There's got to be some big twist in the final act that ends up shocking everyone. And I, like, the only form we could really take, I thought, was Josh winning, because it felt like no one was actually taking Christmas to the end. And even if they were, I don't know if she would have got the vote, although Liana, maybe you have some input there. But yeah, there was this sense of like, okay, I know something's going to happen. I don't quite know what it is, but the only thing that can happen is Josh winning. So let's strap ourselves in and brace for that.
This is the M. Night Shyamalan twist.
Yeah, as they cast the votes, I came away from it after thinking, okay, Josh just won, and then I would talk myself out of it because right after the votes were locked in, it seemed to me like they rolled out this, like, Paul is your winner, look at what a mastermind he is package, where they revealed to everyone that he'd been controlling the entire season, you know, all the people who hadn't, that were in playing against him and hadn't gotten to see it yet. So that really swayed me into thinking, oh, okay, I guess Paul just won close to unanimously again.
Yeah, I think, first of all, Brent doesn't need any more ego stroking, although I love Brent absolutely to death. But anyway, he also won the draft, blah, 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 whatever. Anyway, so
Jessica followed him, by the way. I don't know if you heard.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you know this? headline news, if we're going to talk about takeaways from the season. So I really do think that there kind of was this, oh my gosh, what if this could happen? You know, seeing that jury segment, that was what I tweeted, something along the lines of like, oh my gosh, can you imagine if Paul loses to Josh 5-4 with the votes, you know, going this specific way? And I think there was this excitement about that could possibly happen. But I know from my perspective, and I believe from Taryn's as well, we were nervous about trusting the rumors that had come out about this possibly bitter jury or the way that jury segment had been edited. And so I think because we can never get what we want, there was this little bit of hesitation. Like, we could see it happening, but we weren't, willing to open our eyes to be complete Josh truthers, just based on this limited evidence.
Okay. So I guess I just to quickly go back to it, I said Josh would be the bottom of the list for me, apart from the people who I would say just had absolutely no chance, were the game not essentially rigged in their favor at one point or another, or in Dick's case the entire time. Where would Josh fill in for you? Would there be any other, or even including Dick, Rachel, and Jordan, that you would put above, or Josh below or above? Yeah. That would be below Josh for you. Sorry.
Right.
We get it.
I mean, I that's interesting. And really, you know, thinking to go back to the Survivor comparison of Bob or Fabio, like neither of those really actively, like neither of them actively worked against their own win. And I feel like Josh did to a certain extent. Like he, by antagonizing jury members and antagonizing people in general, he really actively kind of ruined his own game, even though he ended up winning. So somebody who, like Jordan, for example, who obviously benefited from the coup d'etat, but you know, she was just a nice person. And I almost can't help but want to put Josh even under them, because yes, there were, you know, like production interference aside, he really didn't do himself any favors. And it was this jury voting against Paul that ultimately gave him the win. So I would have to think again, really dissect Josh's game, but I feel like I've already done that a lot. And he just didn't do anything to move himself forward in the game. It was sort of this byproduct of Paul. And, you know, the jury messages, the goodbye messages, yes, that was a good thing that he did. Him kind of crying and owning up to him being an obnoxious jerk, I guess, is another thing. But none of that stuff was premeditated. That was just a byproduct of who he is.
All right, you've talked me into putting at least Jordan ahead of him, and maybe even Rachel Riley.
Oh, I'm so proud of myself.
Yeah, and listen, who's to say even where Eddie McGee falls into this? But Dom, where is Josh for you on the winner rankings? Is he near the bottom for you as well, I would imagine?
Yeah, I think I agree with you that he is at the bottom, aside from anyone that you want to put this asterisk by. So you can debate where he falls alongside the Rachels and the Jordans of the world. But yeah, of the normal winners, he has to be near the bottom or at the bottom.
Okay. And I guess we've talked a little bit about it, but do you feel like there will be anything that BB19 is remembered for? Just to close on just Paul and Josh, I want to talk about the rest of the people, but is this just going to be the story of how Josh happened to be the person who beat Paul, or will Josh actually be remembered like for his own merits?
No, I do think it's ultimately, it's still going to be the story of Paul. This was a season that was so incredibly Paul-centric, from him winning, you know, the pendant of protection in the first 3 weeks and having immunity, his feud with Cody, you know, him turning the house against Jessica. I think really this is the story of Paul. And Josh, again, I mean, he really does happen to be those byproducts. Like, we could have easily seen someone else in his situation. For example, if Paul had considered, okay, actually, I should take Raven to the end, or I should take, you know, Elena to the end. Really, you can kind of swap Josh out with anybody else. So it ultimately becomes this saga of Paul's game throughout the season.
Yeah, just quickly, that was one thing I found really surprising, of why, of all the people that Paul could have taken to the end with him, and it seemed like he had that choice and had this whole sampler to choose from, why vote out Raven? It seemed like no one's going to vote for her except Matt, obviously. And she seemed completely loyal to Paul, to the point where even after getting backstabbed, she was his biggest advocate in the jury house. And she doesn't seem like that big of a threat in challenges. So it seems like, whatever metric you're going by, she is the perfect person to take the end. And instead, he set himself up for almost the one way that this could go sour for him, which is you take Josh, and somehow Josh is the beneficiary of this this bit of jury, if you want to call them that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think when we talk about Paul's game, he really played so strongly, except for this huge glaring omission of this, like, jury management, who to take to the end kind of strategy, right? Because just like you said, oh my gosh, Raven would have been perfect for him to sit next to in the end, but he didn't see that. He thought that she was going to get votes because she has, you know, an inverted spine and rough kneecap syndrome. And, you know, he thought that she was going to be able to garner sympathy from the jury members. And, you know, he talked about that. He talked about how Raven was a threat to him, which, oh my goodness, no, Paul, like, this is a horrible read on what's going on. And Josh, the one person who was sort of talking, you know, even at final seven, or I think it was final seven or final five, when Josh won the HOH, he was talking about trying to go against Paul and to get Paul out. And Paul was so blind to this, whether or not he just saw Josh as this complete, you know, just like bumbling idiot kind of situation, or whether or not he, you know, I don't know. He just was unable to see that Josh could have potentially been a threat, and that Raven was this beautiful goat, although, you know, she might suffer from goat syndrome. So I don't want to like put that out in the world. Well, but she, you know, she was a perfect person to go against.
Yeah, I've been under the impression, again, just because of listening to the RHAP coverage of this, that Josh was the only person who would have beaten Paul. If he like, Paul probably would have beaten pretty much anyone else. And I know Dom asked this earlier, but I don't remember which way you said on this. Would Christmas have, if Paul had won and taken her, or if she had won and taken Paul somehow in the final HOH scenario, would she have also beaten Paul, or would he have actually beaten her?
I think Paul would have beaten Christmas. I can't remember if this is something, I don't think we even discussed it on the round table that I did when we kind of tried to break down the votes, but I think based on seeing the jury, there's no way Christmas would have won. They seemed very over her. And okay. I think that we had assumed that she had garnered more respect, but I really don't think that that was the case. I think Paul would have won.
Right. I just assumed she had not irritated people or lied to them and backstabbed them to the point that they would gladly vote for Christmas over either of Josh or Paul, but apparently not the case there. And I suppose that anecdote you brought up, Liana, of the feeds coming on night one and Christmas is just there to plug her book at the end of the season, that's really how it feels to me. It's like Christmas just, as far as I could tell, just gave up at the end and said, okay, I've had my time on TV, I don't really care about winning, you guys go ahead.
Yeah, and we kind of attributed this way back to when she broke her foot, that it was sort of this monumental shift in sort of her mentality. And I get it. Like, that sucks. You kind of go into the season, you're thinking, I'm going to be this very strong physical competitor. I think I have social game as well, you know, and then you essentially just completely remove one element of your game. And so, you know, she only had one leg to stand on. sorry. I think that let's go. So I think that really she just from that moment kind of had resigned herself to this sort of half game. Like, I'm just going to play, I'm just going to see how far it takes me. And then we never really saw that fire turn on inside of her, where when she gets to the end, she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so close. I could really do this. I could really win. She had told Josh and Paul to take each other, which I'm sorry. What? Yeah. You're in the final three and you're going to tell people to take each other? It was just baffling and so incredibly frustrating that, you know, just like you said, I can't help but think that this was, you know, again, like just a push for her brand of look how amazing I am that I'm going to sacrifice for these other two people. And I think Josh and Paul had been telling her that she was going to win America's Favorite Player. And I think she really believed it. And I think she still, at least at the time of those backyard interviews, believed that she would be asked back to play again. And so I think that Christmas was maybe taking the Alex strategy of I'm going to play once and then hopefully be asked back and play again and win that second time. I just don't know what was going through her brain, but that's the best thing that I can think.
I think the foot thing makes sense, but do you feel like it would have been a much different story both for her mentality and also just for Paul's strategy if she hadn't broken her foot? Like, in terms of just staying on the show as long as she could, might that have actually been a good thing for her?
Yeah, as far as just general longevity in the game, I do think that her breaking her foot is a reason to take her as far as possible. I mean, you know, and Brent talked about this where he says she's got a broken foot. Like, of course you're going to bring the girl who has a broken foot. And I think if she hadn't, Paul would have seen her for sure as a threat. Again, coupled with she had a decent social game when she tried. And so I think that the combination of her being a physical competitor and having a pretty bomb social game, I think Paul probably would have gotten her out and maybe the Mark and Elena ish kind of spot. So ultimately, yeah, it does seem that as far as going deeper in the game, this was a benefit to her. But, you know, she didn't want to win. And so, you know, you're never going to win if you don't want to win.
There is an interesting kind of strategic dilemma for Paul of, OK, so you get to the final three. You're hopefully going to be the biggest threat left in the game. You're going to win if you make it there. And you just need to guarantee either that you get taken or that you can win and take whoever you prefer. And if Christmas is there, you can say, well, maybe that's a good thing because that's one person who effectively can't win that final challenge. So it's only you heads up against whoever the other person is. But then you might think, well, maybe I want whoever's taking me to be able to win those challenges so that the third person doesn't. And so maybe I want to take someone like a Raven instead. So do you think if he had maybe gone with a different course, like it would have worked out better for that reason or for any other reason?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, right? Because when you are in that final situation, you can kind of either go one of two ways. Ideally, in, you know, the perfect world, you would have people who would want to take you and, you know, you have a chance to beat so that you could be, you know, kind of like pull your own game. But I think that Paul, because he had won the final part three of that HOH his first year playing, you know, again, he hasn't gone back and watched other seasons. And so I think he assumed that since he had done it once, he would be able to do it again. And I don't think he put much thought into, I need to bring somebody who will take me to the final two. Like, I really don't think that he put two and two together. I think that it was just, I need to take Josh because I can beat Josh in the end. And it was never a sense of, oh, I need to take somebody who I think will also take me. So maybe if he had considered that, you know, Raven, a prime example, right? Somebody who'd said she would take Paul over even Matt, her own showmance, right? So like Raven would have been perfect, but I don't think Paul was even considering this, that, oh, I should take somebody who would be willing to take me. I'm just going to win it all. It's not going to be a problem. I just need to take somebody that I can beat.
Yeah, it sounded like, again, just from the live feed updates, like he decided pretty early that Josh is the person I need to be there against. Like that, I'm going to have a much easier time against Josh than anyone else. And that just, it was one of many ways that he kind of got himself in the wrong mentality and talked himself into losing the game.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think even as far as, and I have the notes for when we broke down Josh's game, but even from week three, he was already being seen as kind of this goat or pawn. And early on, you know, Paul was definitely like, ah, it's fine. You know, if Josh goes, no big deal. But as we start to get to kind of week six and week seven, then really Josh stands out as this is a person who has antagonized so many people, who has pissed off jury members. And in Paul's sort of simplistic understanding of how jury works, he thought that Josh would have been this perfect person to take to the end because, you know, Josh had made all of these egregious errors and banging pots and pans and pissing off the jury members. So that never really changed. Like, I think Taryn is the one who brought this up, but like Paul is being puppeted by former Paul. That Paul had sort of been stuck in this strategy and then was unwilling to change when he got to the end and not seeing that Josh would have been a threat and not seeing that Josh is somebody who could possibly beat him in the end. And Paul just sort of stuck with that because he had decided that Josh was this perfect goat from, you know, week three or week four.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to something. Let's move on to a happier discussion topic. Let's talk about Kevin, who I think emerged as a lot of people's, certainly at the near the top of their list of favorites this season. Kevin with, I would say, a very impressive fourth place run. For typically, we don't see the person in the house who's like 20, 30 years older than the rest of the people go this far, unless it's like purely in GOAT status. But it really seemed like Kevin was in there pretty social with most people for a long time and doing a good job up until the point where they started like freezing him out just because his number got called. But I really think Kevin was, at least for me, one of the high points of the season, maybe the single high point of the season. where are you on Kevin? And how's Kevin doing now that the show's been over? Is he handling it all well?
First of all, I think Christmas was the high point of the season when she got her pain pills. But Kevin, look, Kevin was fantastic. He was a great character. He was one of the nice, like genuinely nice, classy people in the house. And I think that that's very rare that we can say that about any player of Big Brother. But here's what I will say. He is amazing as a person. And he seems to be handling everything really well. He, you know, has been posting a lot of stuff on Twitter and Instagram of him running into fans. And I think his daughters are sort of helping to, you know, usher him into this social media world and post Big Brotherness. But he was a horrible game player. Like, I really just want to put that out there, that I think that we have a tendency to credit people who we just like in general with, oh, okay, yeah, this person was good. No. Kevin was also pretty terrible. Like, Josh was probably worse, but Kevin, you know, he was just a genuine, nice human being. And so that's why his social game was good. He really didn't understand how the game worked. He was loyal to Paul up until the end. Obviously, he voted for Paul, and he kind of suffered from, like, I don't know what to call it, but like Johnny Mac syndrome, where he just by the end of the game, he's not in there with people who want to talk to him. He is, like you said, being isolated, and he just kind of like looks sad. And so as someone who watched the live feeds, I mean, that was kind of the end story that we got of Kevin. Like, yeah, he was still this class act, but he just looks sad. And I just wanted to give him a hug. Like, I know that we talk about banner planes and things like that, but I just wanted somebody to fly in, hug Kevin, and then fly out.
Yeah,
like, that's really what we needed to do with our money.
What I mean just by Kevin doing well early was, it felt to me like we could have played those early rounds, many, many, many iterations of those early rounds, and Kevin would never get probably even up on the block, let alone evicted, just based on the way that people seem to be meshing together.
Right.
But that's not necessarily the sign of some great player, and I agree that he wasn't in there with like great winning chances near the end.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that is the thing, is that Kevin was he is just so likable and he's so funny, and you want to keep somebody like that around. And of course, you know, maybe this is because of his age, but he just doesn't look like a threat. So I think that there's, you know, if we had run this simulation 100 times, I really think there's no way that Kevin would have gone home early.
Yeah. Dom, even you like Kevin, right? Come on.
Yeah, I love Kevin. I don't know why you're so cynical about me.
Well, just because Kevin is a thing and you tend to not like things.
That's fair. I know. I was a big fan of Kevin, and he seems like someone who is so out of fit for what Big Brother is like nowadays and the type of people that they cast, that is his appeal. But I also wonder how enjoyable the experience truly was for him. I imagine he's really enjoying being the beloved figure from the season now back in the real world. But I imagine those few months away from his family, stuck in the house with people who he really didn't seem to connect to on any level, and who obviously, when he was the person who was about to go out the door, were isolating him and giving him the same treatment that Paul was mandating they give him. So I hope that this experience was good for him. I just, as an outsider, it's not clear to me that it was.
Let's run down who besides Josh does not regret being on this season of Big Brother.
Well, we ask that now, but I think a lot of them still have these delusions of grandeur that they're going to come out of this and be famous and everyone's going to love them and they're going to end up getting some TV deal or something.
How's that going for Elena right now?
Yeah. Well, like Jessica and Cody somehow are like, they're going on The Amazing Race and people, they're somehow still together, and it seems to be going okay for them. But I think if you check back in 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, I think the answers for some people might be very different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, is that coming right out of Big Brother, you know, especially because unlike Survivor, you don't get to watch the season go down. You don't get to see sort of, you know, your crescendos of your story. You just come out and, oh my gosh, all of a sudden you're just bombarded with all of these people people, you know, social media is going crazy for you. And it does take a little while to calm down, you know, a couple months for things to really sort of settle in. And so I think that in this immediate aftermath, yeah, I think a lot of them are still pretty happy. Like Elena, for example, or Christmas, I think are still okay, even though ultimately, you know, if they kind of look at the season and the, you know, potential backlash in its totality, I think that they're going to realize that maybe this wasn't the greatest idea to go on Big Brother.
I mean, I am of the opinion that the Big Brother fandom is not worth dealing with for less than first place money. It is not worth having your life out there and having all of these crazy people on you 24/7 for the next decade and a half, unless you come away with $500,000.
Yeah, I would not want my friends to be watching me inside the Big Brother house. I would absolutely not want the kind of like deranged lunatics who make up a sizable portion of the Big Brother fan base to be watching me, commenting on me, contacting my family, trying to get me fired, whatever. Like, it is really just not worth it for
I would guess if you asked Eric Stein, for instance, like, oh, I guess he got extra money because of being America's player, but like some random late jury boot who only got like the jury stipend, I would guess a lot of them feel like it was not nearly worth the money having to deal with the modern era Big Brother fans. I'm sure it wasn't a big issue back in the day.
Well, but like, okay, here's the thing. The people that go on Big Brother are also crazy, right? Yeah. So us who watch the show are crazy. The people who go on Big Brother are crazy. And I'm sure in some weird way, like this feeds their ego, you know, even if it's people yelling at them and hating on them. So, you know, I don't necessarily like think that that's true just because they're not sane people. You know, not that I'm a sane person. Obviously, I watch the freaking live feed. So, But I just want to, you know, point that out that really, you know, who knows these crazy people that we're talking about?
Well, like, okay, so how about Johnny Mack, who played in a very recent season, is a dentist. Like, he does not need Big Brother money. I guess it seems like he's having a good time with kind of the being a Big Brother alum, but I really would have felt like he would be someone that would be like the perfect example of like, why the hell did I sign up for this?
Right. Well, and that's the thing is that we sometimes lament the fact that we don't get these, you know, competitive, accomplished people on Big Brother, like we might see on Survivor. But part of it is, you know, who can take 90 days? Somebody who has a real career. You know, it's actually amazing that Johnny Mack was on. Mm-hmm. And so we don't see those types of people, you know, that go on Big Brother. And so I think that's why maybe we have less, but I think Johnny Mack really is kind of a good example of like, why in the hell would you do this, man? I mean, he was a big fan. So yeah. I guess that's why.
I mean, there was nothing to be a fan of. And Will Kirby, a dermatologist, went on the show back in the day.
Yeah, that's true. And I, you know, I don't know. I honestly, I don't know how these people do it. Like, how did he, was he in med school at the time or was he doing his residency? I don't know. It's amazing that these people can like get off. Although the fact that the show was what, only 60 days at that point, maybe that was part of it. But, but yeah, you know, people with real careers, I think that they're very much, you know, it's unique that we find people like that.
Yeah. Yeah, Will was 27 and 33, I believe, and I know the second time around at least.
Will was like 30 and 36. I'm pretty sure was 30 years old, his first season of Big Brother.
All right, live fact-checking time.
Google Big Brother 2. Here we go.
In real time.
This is a game for the B&B right here, Liana, we can date check what happened. It's like a Big Brother before and after competition. Will, I believe Will was out of med school. I'm pretty sure he was 30 years old, his first season of Big Brother.
Okay. All right, the results are in. Will Kirby was 28 on Big Brother 2.
Hey!
Yeah, there we go. And I want to say probably 33, bordering on 34 in BB7. I know.
Well, I know what part of this podcast is getting edited out.
none of it. This is the best part.
Talk about revisionist history.
Yeah. But I know in All Stars he had his own practice, and one of his frequent complaints on the feed was, I'm taking all this time away and I don't want to be here and why did I even sign up for this? And he was saying that like if he got voted out early, he wanted it to be pre-jury so he could at least just go back to his life, go back to his practice. So yeah, Will stands out as someone who was an accomplished professional and who somehow was able to convince himself to go on Big Brother, and hey, it worked out pretty well for him. So he at least can't complain.
Here he is 17 years later, still on Big Brother.
Oh my gosh. Did y'all watch his backyard interviews?
Yeah, some of it. I watched the highlights were great. Although, frankly, there were a couple spots where I thought he was just like straight cruel to certain people.
Oh, yeah.
So as much as we all enjoy watching Will, I don't think Will is a nice person. I don't think he's the type of guy that you would reveal like your deepest weaknesses to, right? Because you know he's just gonna like mercilessly hone in on them. If this is what Will not caring about Big Brother or pretending not to care about Big Brother looks like, I'm fine with him pretending not to care for as long as he likes, because this was fantastic.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny. Yeah, can you imagine actually opening up to Will like about any of your secrets? Like, no, of course not. The guy's gonna like ruthlessly make fun of you and then somehow use that against you in the game. That's not a good thing.
Yeah. It really is shocking that anyone ever tells him anything, but there you, I mean, that's what makes him,
charming.
Yeah.
It's
charisma for you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's move on to, some more charisma. How about some Alex Au, everyone's favorite? It does actually sound like people are really warming up to her now that she's out of the house. Now she seems to have had some time away from it. Can you confirm or deny that for me, Liana? Are people coming around on Alex?
You know, I think she's somebody who we kind of expected to just get so much hate, you know, because she had said some horrible, horrible things and had been bullied, you know, partaking in all of this bullying. And so I think in kind of comparison to what I expected, there's definitely less hate. I wouldn't say necessarily that people are warming up to her. Like, she is definitely still sort of denying that she had really any part in kind of the bullying. Like, for example, she was saying that, oh, but you know, you guys didn't see the buildup, you know, to some of the fights after people had pointed out to her that there are 24/7 live feeds. So she's in the same way that she didn't, you know, really own up to anything in the house. She's not owning up to anything now. And so I think that because she's just so much of a lost cause, like, you can't reason with a person like that. And so people are trying to have these arguments where they're like, okay, but no, like, you really did do all of these mean things. And since she just completely denies all this stuff, you kind of just want to like pat her on the head and sit her in the corner. Like, there's nothing good that's going to come out of discussing with her.
Yeah, Dom, where did you end up on with Alex? Did you even start in a place where you liked Alex, and how did that go for you over the course of the season?
When we did our first podcast, I was already out on Alex, and I saw nothing or heard nothing, given that I wasn't watching the season, to make me change that.
Out?
I was just gonna
Alex
go with
out?
The...
All right, forget it. That's bad.
Well, I was just gonna go with, Dom, didn't you really think that Alex was such a good game player? This like way of Colin just putting words in your mouth. I'm really enjoying this. I think I'm gonna try that.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Where you just really set him up with where you. Yeah. All right.
Like, didn't you think that?
Yeah. It's these are your words, not mine, Dom. Okay. But yeah. So Alex, I know she famously now was someone who said she wanted to go in there to play to get asked back, and it doesn't seem honestly at this point like she was alone in that. Who do we think may actually come back from this cast, if anyone?
Well, I think the fact that you see Cody and Jess getting on The Amazing Race, I mean, that's obviously a good sign for them, right? There is something that the producers see that they were, you know, not necessarily good game players, but certainly good characters. So the fact that they were asked back for The Amazing Race, you know, do I think that that hurts their chances on possibly coming back for some sort of, you know, returning players season? Possibly, but I really think Cody, him winning America's Favorite Player also, I think really just helps to add to kind of his, not necessarily Big Brother resume, but like being asked back to Big Brother resume, of him just being this, you know, contrarian to Paul and really standing out as this good character. I think other than that, I mean, maybe Whistlenut, maybe Alex, those are other people that I could see. I really don't think though that there are others like Mark and Elena. Unfortunately, I don't think that they're going to get asked back. I don't think that Christmas will get asked back, much to, you know, her chagrin, but, and I really don't think Kevin is going to get asked back either. I think while there are a lot of people that, you know, we kind of grew to enjoy him, he didn't stand out really the way Cody did, for example. So I think that Big Brother is looking for people like Paul, who kind of stood out. Like, Paul stood out from in BB18 from week 2 or 3 when Victor was on the block. And I think that, you know, who would you say falls under that category of this cast? Cody really is the main person that stands out to me.
Yeah, although Cody seems like, even when he won fan favorite, he was like, I don't understand how I won this. I can't believe it. I can't believe you guys liked me. Well, Dom, I'll frame this in the way that I always do. You hate everyone and don't want to see any of these people back, right?
Well, no, can we talk about Jody in particular? Because I've been baffled all season long. I wouldn't say I'm completely surprised, because the fan base is what it is. But the way that they have acquired this kind of celebrity or cult following, despite really doing nothing of distinction at all, other than briefly opposing Paul. And even Jessica, like, she, after Cody was evicted the first time, it wasn't like she went on some amazing tear and she was the one voice of opposition in the house to Paul. She tried to work her way back in. She was trying to reintegrate herself and wasn't even that good at it because she was evicted shortly thereafter. Like, it's not as if Jessica or Cody was the underdog that people were looking for, but somehow they got shoehorned into that role. And that's been enough to give them this amazing popularity, which I don't think they ever really earned or deserved insofar as those terms even mean anything. And it's been, especially with like the Elena exposed party and everyone exposed party, because this is a type of people that Big Brother cast nowadays, like Jessica and Cody, Cody in particular, both said a lot of pretty reprehensible things in the house. Cody, after he left the house, has been doubling down on those. And the type of people who are understandably and correctly, I would say, just raking Elena over the coals and criticizing other people for their actions and their comments are just giving Cody and Jessica a free pass because they're fans and that's what you do to the people you're fans of. And I still don't get it.
Well, first of all, there's a JP exposed party hashtag that really should have come out of this season or this episode of Survivor. Secondly, how dare you accuse the Big Brother fandom of not acting rationally or treating people the same, because they're obviously very fair. No, I mean, look, that's the thing, is that because exactly like you said, because Josh and Cody and Jessica opposed Paul for, you know, 1 or 2 weeks, that's enough to sort of dismiss a lot of the transgressions that and comments that, for example, Cody made in the house. And I think that part of it also is recency, you know, the Elena stuff, like all of those Twitter comments have been there on her Twitter for however long. And now they're just sort of coming about. So I don't know, you know, what it was that brought brought those to the forefront. But, you know, that's just what people are discussing most recently. And sort of Cody, because he opposed Paul, sort of gets this pass on a lot of the things that he said, and Jessica along with him.
Yeah, well, this kind of leads into something that I wanted to bring up, and now seems like a good time. I did not come away enjoying this season. I feel like this was a good example of like what just all that Big Brother has become. Like, to have Josh win, to have Cody win fan favorite and not even care, like, because I'm totally on board with everything that Dom said. Like, I feel like Cody and Jess are just getting an unbelievable free pass, despite a lot of the stuff that they said and did. Especially even like just compared to some of the people that are getting like I would definitely be generally like more offended by like what Cody and Jess did than a lot of the things that like Alex, for instance, I would imagine. And I say that not knowing all of the details of the reasons everyone hates Alex or whatever, but it seems like they just hated her for more game reasons and personality reasons than like stances that are just ugly and abhorrent as far as I can tell.
I
wasn't tracking the like day-to-day conversations that like her shit talking people behind their back or whatever. Maybe that's a bad example then. But
see, Colin, everything is bad.
But that's my point. That's what I'm getting at. It's like, I really feel like BB19, I don't see virtually any redeeming quality for like feeling like I can justify just having spent my summer watching this 3 nights a week, even just watching it and listening to podcasts. Like, I feel like I really wasted my time here. And I feel horrible about it, but like, it's at the point where like, I'm really tempted to not watch BB20. Like, I really don't feel like this season was worth it at all. Like, I feel like even certain seasons, like BB18 or like BB16, other recent, somewhat boring seasons, at least have kept me relatively entertained along the way, or were at least not offensive to me when I wasn't paying as much attention. But I really did not care for this season at all.
Look, we say that every single season, and yes, then next year everyone tunes in for the first episode again, as always. And I know this time around there were so many people saying, oh, this cast actually looks pretty good, and I'm excited for Big Brother again for a change. And we said ourselves, we're actually going to cover this season, we're going to stick it out for the first few weeks and see what happens, as JP would say. And it turns out nothing happened, and we quit after the first episode that we did with Liana. So thanks, Liana, great job.
But that's my point. Like, this was the most promising looking season during the early weeks in a long time, and look what it immediately turned into and stayed the entire summer.
And I agree with you, and I think that's it's not just a quirk of this season in particular. Is this is what the show is nowadays.
Right.
And
a bad show. This is not a show that we should be watching.
Well, especially, I can understand if you watch the live feeds and you get engrossed with those and then you listen to all of the analysis of that because that's a fun thing to immerse yourself in. But if you are one of these like semi-casual fans who only watches the episodes three times a week, what do you think the show even is? What is there about it to enjoy? I'm at a loss.
Yeah, okay. So first of all, I always try to be some sort of beacon of optimism, but because also maybe because I dedicate so much of my life to this show, like I'm just trying to tell myself, oh no, Liana, it's okay. This is totally normal and worth it. You're definitely not wasting your time. But I can see from a more casual perspective of not kind of keeping up with the live feeds, because I think that that's what I love so much about Big Brother is the fact that there are these live feeds and you can see this discrepancy between the way the show is edited and what's actually happening. And someone who like me is super detail oriented. I just love all of this stuff. And you get to see, you know, even people like Derek, for example, who I think BB16, although, you know, CBS really seems to love BB16, but I think by and large, people would agree it is a boring season. But watching his gameplay was just so wonderful, you know, because there are these little subtleties that, you know, he brings, but you only see that if you watch the live feeds. You don't see that if you watch the show. So like my ex, for example, I tried to make him watch a little bit of this season. That did not go well. Although, you know, not why we're not together, but anyway, so he was like, oh,
that
Paul,
would be funny
like,
if it was.
I know,
broke
it broke
up
over
Big
Brother. Yeah, it's totally a thing. No, you know, he just hated Paul. And that was like, that was all he knew about the season. And he, like, I don't know what different people are taking away from the season, but I think it is... It wasn't that great of a season, but I don't know if also part of that has to go with the fact that all of the stuff that was kind of happening behind the scenes with all of the rude comments that were made. So, you know, because you both... you know, maybe aren't as invested in the live feeds, you're still hearing all of the coverage that's going along with it. So I think somebody who just watches the season and doesn't listen to any of the coverage might have a different opinion.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, plenty of, like, frankly, there are a lot of people that I just see from time to time at poker games. Like, the main poker community loves reality TV. They love Survivor and Big Brother. And they all, whatever the season is, they're all into it. They don't care. It doesn't even really matter what's happening on the show. They just find it interesting regardless. But they are not people who, I think, like me, just put the early seasons and what the game used to be on such a pedestal compared to what it is today. And maybe even... to the point of unfairness. Like, I understand that the reality of just the TV landscape has changed, and maybe they need to target like a younger or just wider demographic for Big Brother than they once did back in the beginning. But I truly do feel like, I know I say, like, you're right, Dom, that we say this every time, like, oh, how could we sit and waste our summers, and then we keep falling for it. And I'm saying, I really feel like BB20 or BB Celebrity, I guess, what BB Celeb is coming up next, it's really going to be cast dependent for me. Like, I definitely felt great after completely just saying, I'm not doing BBOTT. Even during those early weeks, people were saying, oh, this is the Big Brother we've always wanted. We get to see the competitions. We get to see them on launch night, etc. Within 3 weeks, everyone was hating that season and regretted watching it in the first place. I feel like that's just been so many of these recent Big Brother seasons that I really am going to do everything I can to not watch the next one, I feel like.
Yeah, so, Liana, you in for the premiere next year? Can we throw that in right now?
Yeah, well, neither of you will watch it, and then I'll just get to talk. I'll just make some stuff up. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Well, yeah. Well, quickly, to go back to hearing you talk about your ex not being into Paul back on the season, made me think of something that we should have talked about when we were talking about Paul. But what do we think the impact of Paul running this season, like pillar to post, is going to have on them putting in one or just a couple of vets in future seasons?
I want the takeaway to be, please don't put vets in the season, especially just one vet. But I don't think that that's going to be the case. You know, I think production really liked BB16, even though there are fans who, you know, disagree. But I think that they feel good, I think, about this season. I mean, that's the sense that I get. And I don't think that they're going to take away the same lessons of, look, this is what happens when you put one vet. You know, when you put a vet in, they are overpowered and they especially, oh my gosh, then you give them the pennant of protection. Like, really? I mean, Paul was able to run the game. You know, Jason made it to Final Two in OTT. You had Nicole win when there were only four vets in the house. And, you know, James and Nicole made it to Final Three. So I think the takeaway should be, please don't put vets in the season. Please don't do a mixed season. You know, do straight newbies or try to do an all-stars cast. But I think the takeaway is just going to be, oh, this was a fun season. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, do they care about how a season plays out? Maybe they are like the people from the main poker scene were like, as long as, from their perspective, as long as the numbers aren't horrible, as long as we're not bleeding viewers, whatever we're doing is working and it doesn't really matter what we put out there.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is that, so I don't know what production are thinking. I don't know what's in their head, but if I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes, right, what is it that they're prioritizing? And it is like you're saying, it's, they want good numbers. They want people tuning in and watching this season and, you know, ideally avoid controversy a la BB15. And so as long as those two like conditions are met, I feel like then that is a good season and they ultimately don't care if people are tuning in. And if Paul is the gimmick that gets people to tune in, then they're going to continue to do things like this where they bring back somebody who, you know, will get people hooked and will get people watching the season because they just care ultimately about, you know, the number of viewers.
Yeah. And I guess that does point pretty squarely at Jess and Cody being the front runners to return, right? If they're the ones who have run away as America's favorites.
I mean, they're literally running away on the Amazing Race.
That's right. That's right. How are they going to do? Let's get our calls out there early. Where are they going to end up in the Amazing Race? Dom, did you already say they're going to win the first leg? Someone said they're going to win the first leg and then get like confused by the directions in round two or three and be out.
Yeah. How do you think they're going to do compared to other BB alumni who have made the transition over? So like Allison and her boyfriend, like 10 years ago, they kind of flopped pretty hard. Jeff and Jordan, I know it didn't go so well for them. It doesn't seem like it's a great experience to prepare you for the Amazing Race.
Brendan and Rachel got to the finals, right? Yeah.
I think they got third twice, right? Or something like that. I like the idea of them being confused, because that makes me happy. But I think, you know, Cody with his background, you know, being in the military, I really think that he's actually might do okay. And they seem to also, as far as their communication skills go, this seems so weird to like be breaking down their relationship, but they actually seem to communicate well. And I think that misled them in the game of Big Brother. And so we might have that mislead them in the Amazing Race. But the thing is like, you just have to not be last. So I could see them, you know, making it decently far, maybe going out sixth or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I was thinking about this earlier. Dom tweeted out like on finale night, and I think I retweeted it too, that like Cody and Jessica are probably going to have the lasting power of the average like bachelorette couple. But just thinking through the Big Brother house, like we have two marriages now, right? For like this really does seem a lot like the BB12 Brendan and Rachel dynamic, and they're still together. They have at least one child together now, and Jeff and Jordan are still together. Like, I actually think there's a lot more potential for Cody and Jess than for any couple that comes off The Bachelor.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, I think, three marriages now. If you include, let's see, who else am I thinking of? I know that there's three, but anyway. So, it's actually kind of amazing. I think somebody broke down the stats of, you know, the couples in Big Brother versus couples on The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, and that Big Brother is actually maybe better at producing long-lasting relationships. And I creepily watched Jess and Cody like fall in love with each other. They truly just have some bizarre bond. And I think out of all the couples in the house, I could really see them. I know there are a lot of people who are dismissing them. Oh, blah, 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 whatever. You're in the house. You know, sort of are just, you know, you're put in this very false like situation. But I think out of all the couples that we've seen in Big Brother, I think they have the possibility to have this Jeff and Jordan or Brenchel kind of romance.
Yeah. Yeah. Dom, I assume you're wishing them all the best.
Naturally, of course, I hope to officiate at that wedding whenever it happens. I think it's a kind of relationship which maybe works as this brief fling in the very artificial context of the Big Brother house, and then out in the real world, it seems like they live very different lifestyles. They live in different places. Like Cody has a kid, and I don't think Jessica is in for having to kind of manage that at the moment. So if they can make it work, then I genuinely do wish them the best of luck. But I'm not convinced so far. And who cares? Like why does it matter to me if this reality TV couple makes it in the real world? Like it's no one should bother about this at all.
That is the correct
plus
answer.
Plus, you hate all people.
Yeah, right? Not just people, so. Things, just things, trees.
As someone who hates all things, how do you feel about this?
Yeah. Well, I guess.
Oh, yeah. No, who cares?
Yeah. Hashtag somewhat cared, but never truly cared. So let's move on to someone actually. If we were to rank, I think like the next most likely returnee, it might be Whistlenet. Is that a crazy thought, Liana?
No, you know, he is one of the people that I brought up that could possibly come back. I think he got, you know, they revealed the top three, I think, for America's Favorite Player, and it was Whistlenet, Kevin, and Cody. And so I think that Whistlenet, he also had some unfortunate comments. This is like, unlike the series of unfortunate events, this is like the season of unfortunate comments. But he was also just one of these people who had a great social game because he was just genuinely likable and just genuinely charismatic. And I think that CBS seemed to like him. And, you know, he also does a little bit of this sort of branding. Like you can kind of put him in his own bucket. Like CBS doesn't really do well with complexity, which is why maybe BB16 is their favorite season because it was so straightforward to edit. But Whistlenet, you know, falls in that category, and so I think that you could see him come back because of, you know, his just general charisma and likability.
Yeah, I definitely am with that. I also could see Mark coming back, although I think earlier you said that wouldn't be the case, but I feel like people liked Mark, and I think he fits because of just his stature into an archetype that they like. Like I think people like the incredible sulk, as they call him, like the sensitive big guy.
Well, it is hard for me to tell because I am a weird lurker in this like super intense community who talks about Big Brother. So really, if the, you know, CBS production is talking about bringing somebody back, it's going to be somebody who has large scale recognizability and is somebody who, you know, the casuals enjoy. And so I think that Mark, with his incredible sulk kind of persona, and, you know, I don't know if the fight with Josh helped or anything. He's on the border for me as far as somebody who would be brought back. I think that we talk about him so much because we can easily meme him. And that's something that we can share on the internet. But I think as far as the casuals go, I don't know like how well he stood out to them.
Okay. And just how have Mark and Whistlenet both been outside of the house now? Have they come around at all on Paul?
As far as their relationship with Paul, I'm not sure. There was this picture that went around right after where Paul, it was on, I think, Snapchat, but it was, you know, all the jurors who voted for him and then Paul at his house. And so the joke was like, oh, he only invited the people that voted for him. But then there were conflicting evidence or conflicting reports. Elena said they were not invited, but then Kevin said, or like his daughters or something said that, he, you know, the other people were invited. So I think there's still a lot of fallout from all of this. I wouldn't say that anyone has kind of come around. I know that people who have apologized for their comments, Whistlenet is one of them. Like he has sort of owned up to some of the things that he said in the house, and so that's definitely appreciated. But Mark has, you know, they went to, I think Mark and Elena went to Dancing with the Stars. I think he's really raking in his, you know, 15 minutes of fame, but owning up to or coming around on Paul is definitely not one of those things.
Yeah, I will say that Paul got a lot of backlash for what you're describing of only supposedly inviting the people who voted for him. I'm not really sure why. Like, I'm not a Paul defender by any means, but it seems like why would you actively want to invite the people who have shown how much they hate you by voting for Josh to win over you? Like, they who made this pact in jury to vote for anyone who wasn't you to win the game. Like, there's no obligation for Paul to like be on good terms with people he doesn't want to be, or to invite everyone and make a like put on a good face and make a nice show out of it, and especially not with the people who like caused him this defeat, which I imagine only a few days after the fact is still incredibly raw and painful for him.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's certainly Paul is not beholden to, you know, he can invite whoever he wants to his house. You know, who are we to talk about it? But I think it comes in a direct contrast of him saying, never cared, you know, like whatever, it's just a game. And then you kind of see him do these little petty things, which I think that's what kind of people are thinking about. And so because we're seeing these two things in direct contrast, I think that's why he's gotten more grief. But, you know, yeah, he can invite whoever, like, I don't care who Paul hangs out with, but
never cared.
Whatever, Paul, it's fine. I didn't get an invite to your party, but it's fine. Whatever, never cared.
Yeah.
Do we know how, in the light of the hashtag Elena Exposed party, Marlena is doing at the moment?
I mean, as far as I understand, they're still together. They were at the mall the other day. A fan ran into them, posted a picture on the BB subreddit.
It sounded like you ran into them. Like, yeah, I saw them at the mall the other day.
I wasn't invited. I wasn't invited, Colin. Okay. I go to the mall. That's not me. Anyway, so as far as I know, they're still together, but we'll see. I think Dr. Will asked the question of, I think, you know, who's going to break up, who's going to have a baby on finale night, and then who's going to be in it for the long haul. I still would probably put my money on Jess and Cody, but it seems that Mark and Elena, especially once the game was over and going to the Big Brother, the jury house, they really seem to have bonded. And as far as I know, they're still together.
Okay. Well, that's I guess good, but let's get into the previously referenced Elena Exposed party, because you're right. This is stuff that existed the whole time she was in the house. And for people unfamiliar, right at the end of the season, a lot of tweets came to prominence that Elena tweeted some many, many years ago, and some as recently as like early 2017, with some very off-color takes, to say the least. And it sounds like she has kind of not even really shied away from it, from what I've understood. It sounds like she's almost doubling down on some of this. What is the latest on the Elena Exposed party and how all of that has been falling out?
Yeah, off-color things is like the nicest way you could ever describe it. She, yeah, has a lot of unfortunate tweets. And the thing is that when these all sort of came to light, you know, she was obviously tagged in a lot of these posts. People were kind of trying to get her, like, look, this evidence exists. She didn't delete them. I wouldn't say she necessarily doubled down, but there was sort of this air of, you know, why are y'all hating, right? Of, like, why are you coming after me? And it's like, well, have you read the things that you said? Like, these are really, really bad. And so she issued some sort of kind of half-assed apology that wasn't really an apology. It was kind of like, you know, we all make mistakes, something, something, but never like really directly addresses the things that she said. And so I think a lot of people are kind of in the, you know, either they're extremely upset or they're, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah. Well, let me state for the official record, because the one podcast we did during the middle of the season was just me talking with Andy Heron, and we both were big Elena fans at the time. I certainly don't know where Andy's at with that now, but for me, I am out for sure on Elena. Like, just for the official record, I'm sure everyone was dying to know whether I was going to still be in on Elena or not. I am very out on Elena.
Well, but and see, like, that's the thing, is that we got sort of this sense of her being snarky in the jury house. And I think people were, oh, my gosh, you know, Elena, if you could have played this way in the house, what a great player you would have been. And the season ends, and then all of this stuff comes to light. And everybody's like, oh, God damn it.
I got the sense of her being snarky, which I liked. I did not get the sense of her being like mega racist, which I'm not as into. Yeah.
Yeah, mega racist is like not a thing I think anybody wants. Sorry, that reminds me of Pokemon, just because we were talking about that on the B&B, but the, you know, mega racist evolution.
Yeah. All right. Dom, any fire takes from you on the Elena Exposed part? I assume you sign off on everything she's written.
Yeah, I think any hot takes about what she said would be so skirting the boundary that there's just no point even going there. So no, I'm completely on board with both of you. And I think the less said about it, the better. Let's move on to something else.
All right. Well, let's move on just quickly to Liana. The temptations, I thought, were interesting over the course of this season and might actually be like the one thing that I thought had potential from BB19. Do you feel like that could be something we see come back? Where I know they called this the Summer of Temptations, but I could see this becoming a potentially recurring thing. Is that something you could also see?
yeah, because the fan favorite Battleback, or Battle of the Block, was definitely right. You know, there. I think that the temptation competition is actually sort of an interesting wrinkle in the game, and I think that that's something that I personally would like to see brought back, because one, it's a competition, so you know, we know that Big Brother is always hankering for this Sunday episode competition, so this gives them something to, you know, sort of focus the episode around. But also, it, you know, it does create some interesting strategy. So we saw, for example, when Cody and Jess tried to both win and throw the competition, so one would be safe and then the other person would actually be able to compete in the veto, so they wouldn't be backdoored. Like, I think that that is sort of, you know, it allows for a choice, and I think that that always can make for interesting gameplay. Like, I love this on Survivor when there's in a competition or in one of the challenges, there's an opportunity to make a decision, to choose the puzzle or, you know, whatever it may be, to try and find the idol during the challenge. And so I like this in the sense for Big Brother that it is this decision that's made. It throws a wrinkle in the game. Now, just because I like it, again, doesn't mean that the producers are going to like it. But I think because it centers around a challenge or a competition, I really do think that this is something we could see again.
Yeah. And I, to be clear, like, I actually I really like this. I know I was giving BB19 a bit of a hard time earlier, but I actually do think the temptation competition particularly is a really good hit that, like, I think could really do a lot of seasons well. It could serve a lot of seasons well having it, but it ties into something. Another point that I just wanted to bring up at some point was I felt like this season really did a good job of painting how just prevalent and overused the backdoor idea has become, and how just every single week it was, we got to backdoor so-and-so, or the fake plan is we're going to backdoor so-and-so to keep us other people unconcerned. Like, every single week, it seemed like everything was revolving around who's getting backdoored this week, or who are we lying about getting backdoored this week, to the point that I almost would be okay with them going back to everyone gets to play in the veto now. Like, I really feel like we are so – the nominations now have become almost – like, they're not meaningless, obviously. Like, they still matter to a certain extent, but it is so often the case that the nominations are just a ruse, that I feel like something needs to be done to change the game on that front. How do you feel about that, Liana?
Well, first of all, I love that you were like, yeah, I was kind of harsh on BB19.
A
where you're
bit.
Saying, I'm never going to watch this show again. This season was so awful. I do agree with you. And I think that we saw the when Derek essentially and then Vanessa ultimately sort of broke the Battle of the Block, and they were able to just, you know, put up 2 pawns, have someone or put up 4 pawns, have someone throw it. And that's sort of all she wrote. And I think in a similar sense with this season with Paul, we saw backdoors again and again and again, and it is sort of getting a little predictable. And so if this is something that production really wants to throw a wrench in this plan, you know, whether or not it's going back to having everybody compete in the veto competition, or, you know, having this temptation competition or something like that, that can sort of disrupt that strategy, I think that that would be interesting to see. But you know, I don't know. I really don't know how much production cares about that.
I don't even think the temptation competition is enough. I think like the only thing I can come up with right now is including everyone in the veto competition, where right. they're, you know, everyone is eligible for that. So you just nominate who you fucking want to nominate, please. Thank you for HOH. Dom, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I might almost take it further and just say, just get rid of the whole veto thing. Go back to the BB2 system.
Right.
Like, if you want to nominate someone.
Never happening. Obviously, we would do that, but it's never, ever going to happen.
But I think it would take away from just all of the. It just feels so dragged out nowadays. It's like, obviously, you know that if you're going to go after someone, you're going to try and backdoor them. So the initial nominations don't even have this suspense to them most of the time. And then you have to wait for the veto competition for anything to really happen. And then that's another like competition you have to sit through, and another episode, another few days you have to wait. Just front load all of it. If you want to get someone out of the house, you nominate them, you put yourself out there, and you let them play and try and win the veto.
Well, okay, so then let me ask this question. Then how do you both feel about the split vote on Survivor, right? Because I feel like that sort of falls into a similar category, and that was with, you know, what we saw in Game Changers, which has now been revoked, but we're not doing split votes. Or as soon as, if there's a tied vote, we're immediately going to rocks.
Right. No, I definitely think you're right. It's gotten to the point where it's broken.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like that. And I like that, even if, excuse me, even if the implementation isn't maybe as good as it could be, I like that they're trying to mix things up on Survivor to at least get around that problem, whereas BB doesn't seem to be even acknowledging that they might have a problem.
Right, and on Survivor, I would say the solution to the problem is it's certainly not always the case that it's a bunch of people following someone and just being willing to go along with a split vote plan. There are plenty of times where it's a smart thing to do. But I just frankly feel like in those cases, it comes down again to casting to me. I really feel like early in the game, if you're splitting votes because it's pre-merge and you've got like a solid group, there's nothing that production is going to do about that. And I would chalk that up to just people being smart and wanting to stick to a group early. When we're at like final nine or whatever, and people are still splitting votes, I would say the issue there is not casting enough self-interested people.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Well, neither of you will be watching Big Brother 20 anyway, so I guess it's not
I'm leaning no. It's going to depend on the cast, and I'll probably do at least the premiere. But I do feel like maybe this is what you do. Maybe you just watch the first 2 weeks and then just cut it off no matter how good it looks, because it's never getting better from there. When's the last time it got better after the first 2 weeks? BB17?
Yeah, this isn't BoJack Horseman. It doesn't get better.
It doesn't get better, exactly.
Maybe this is a situation. We need to have an intervention with production. Like, we need to sit them down. You have a problem. We really need to talk about this. Yeah. I think the difference between the split vote thing and the backdooring is because we see the backdooring, it seems like, almost every week, where, like you said, you know, the split votes we see less often. And so it's a little bit less rote in that sense. I don't know what we're going to see. I think that production really is still interested in throwing in new twists. Obviously, this was the summer of Temptation, although really the final competition had nothing to do with like Temptation. It was a farting unicorn. Like, are you serious? Whatever. Anyway, so I think that they're going to throw something in now, whether or not they stick with this this type of competition. You know, we saw the, oh my gosh, what was it called? The roadkill competition last year.
Oh my God, yeah.
which, yikes, at least this is better than that. I think we're still going to see something. I don't know if it will do anything to kind of actively work against this backdoor.
Okay. So let's, I've put myself out there and said, this might for me be like literally the worst season other than BB1 and maybe like BB16 was just so boring. But this is certainly extraordinarily near the bottom of my list. Where is this for you? Did you feel like this actually had more redeeming value than I'm giving it credit for?
I think we forget about the early parts of the season, because we did have this really great Paul Cody rivalry. And I think even just watching the show, there were some really good episodes. That being said, as the season progressed, there were some really awful episodes that I remember like sitting halfway through being like, why am I watching this? Somebody who is like obsessed, like idiotically obsessed with the show. Like, I was questioning why I was watching it. And so I think it really just did get worse as the season progressed. As far as, you know, where I would rank it, BB17 was better. BB16 in my mind, I thought was better because, you know, part of it was watching feeds and sort of watching Derek play. So I have a weird take on that. I think I would have to do a rewatch to really place it, but this is certainly lower tier for me.
Are you ever going to rewatch this season?
Oh yeah. I'm an insane person. Okay.
When are you going to think to yourself, okay, I have all the stuff out there that I could do. I have the entire sum of human knowledge out there on the internet. The best thing I can do with my time right now is to rewatch BB19.
How dare you question my priorities, okay? I use my time efficiently, thank you very much. No, I'll probably put it on in the background. I actually rewatched BB16 recently, so yikes. But that's the thing, is that I'll have it on in the background. I won't be, analyzing it. But just to get a sense of, again, we get, myself included, just get so invested and I'm so detail-oriented and so focused. And so we remember these week 10, week 11, week 12. But, you know, that was just a third of the season, a quarter of the season. And so to kind of look at it in its totality and to, you know, compare it against other seasons, like I'm an insane person. It'll happen at some point and I will do a rewatch and I will place it in my pantheon of rankings.
All right, Dom, how about you?
Well, I didn't watch it the first time, so I can't rewatch it, but that is not on the table.
No, I'm saying, where's the ranking for you?
Oh. Well, again, not having watched it is really hard to say, but it's got to be towards the bottom just for that fact alone, I would argue.
Like, the fact that you didn't watch it, like, might be an indicator that it probably wasn't a good season.
Just maybe, yeah.
Well, Dom hates everything, as we established, so Dom not liking it isn't really an indicator of much. Although in this case, it does feel accurate. Liana, we definitely don't want to let you out of here without asking a bit about BB Celebrity. What do we know about this so far?
Oh my gosh. So, as far as confirmed cast, nothing has been released. I think I want to say Jenna Fisher was
from the
rumored.
Office. From from The Office, as it's known. not
and
British
she very
Office.
Quickly said. She very quickly said, "No, that's absolutely not happening. Don't even associate me with that." Like, she was very, very quick to that.
Yeah, no, we want trashy celebrities, right? That's the point. Not actually, you know, well-adjusted people. There are members of the Big Brother cast who are actually going to be on the challenge. So I know Corey Brooks, Victor, Natalie, and Zakiya is the final rumored person.
They're on an actual season of the challenge?
Season 31, which I think went out to film recently. Victor makes sense. Oh my gosh. Did y'all see the Corey video?
No. Is Corey the one from BB18? Or 17?
Yeah, he's the one that... Yeah, he's from BB. He's from BB18. He's the one that like dated Nicole.
Right.
He's like sort of cross-eyed, the like version of human wallpaper. That,
I got it.
You know,
yeah. Who was
Christmas.
The one from 17? Clay was his name. Who was 17?
Clay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that was Clay. Yes, in that generic white boy archetype.
Right.
That's Corey. Victor, obviously.
They're gonna get killed. By the way, they're gonna get absolutely fucking crushed by Johnny Bananas.
I'm so excited.
They're going to get murdered on that show.
Yeah, because I think I'm pretty sure CT's out there. I don't want to spoil anything, but it's going to be really interesting. The theme is rumored to be some sort of like love and like it's sort of like Rivals, but I can't remember exactly what it is. It's some sort of like love and hate, like kind of themed season. So that'll be interesting.
Wait.
Not to like.
They're gonna get
so
destroyed, and it's gonna be so. Oh, I'm a huge fan of the challenge. I much prefer the challenge to Big Brother at this point.
Okay, all right, that's fair. Oh my gosh, this season's been so good. The Dirty 30.
It's been so
anyway,
good.
So not to derail the BB Celebrity conversation, but so because of that, there's then talks of, oh my gosh, what if, you know, this is kind of a tit for tat type situation where now we're going to have people from the challenge come in on the celebrity version. A lot of people have thrown out their people that they want, like Tiffany Pollard from VH1 Reality Fame has been someone who's been brought up, but we really don't know. The one thing is that Frankie Grande, everyone has like decidedly we do not want, but we will probably get because this is Big Brother.
Yeah, I was going to ask just how many quotation marks are we placing around celebrity here, because what you asked earlier about how for a lot of people taking 3 months away from their lives just isn't possible to go and play Big Brother, that is even more true of celebrities. And even if I imagine they will have to cut it down and shorten it to, let's say it's just 1 month, even mm-hmm. that you're already boxing out anyone who actually has a serious ongoing career. So you're going to get the Frankie Grandes who can take a month away from their career such as it is.
This
you're not going to get the
Ariana Frankie
Grande.
Grande's career is like aspiring Big Brother player.
sure but like you're not going to get anyone who actually has a high profile and who is still doing stuff, is still active. You're going to get a bunch of, you're just going to get 16 BoJack Horsemen or horsewomen who just don't have anything to do anymore.
Oh my god, how amazing would that be?
I would watch that if that was actually what the show was. But.
I would absolutely watch that. Yeah, I know that, you know, this doesn't obviously translate well because this is a podcast, but I'm absolutely using air quotes every single time I say the word celebrity. Because it's just like you said, we're like over under how many YouTube stars we're going to see, right? Like
right.
More or less than three. I don't know. But that's like the caliber of people I feel like we're going to have in the show.
Right. Like Jenna Fisher is a celebrity, which is how you know she's not going to be on Big Brother Celebrity.
Exactly. She is a real celebrity. She will absolutely not be on the show.
Yeah. Dom, are you psyched for a Big Brother Celebrity? Because I know this is a very regular thing in the UK.
Yeah, you already know the answer to that. And if you didn't, you could probably work it out.
I know you're a huge fan of things in general.
Of things.
Well, the version here in the UK is, if you can imagine, even more trashy than the American version is likely to be. And again, it's not actual celebrities. It's public figures who are long past their sell-by date who are just trying to desperately regain their former relevance.
Can we get Nikki Graham on the... Is she famous enough for the U.S.? Is she a good fit?
So good for
you. We can give that a go. I might actually be in for that. So the other thing I wonder, too, is, like, what is the format going to be? Because if it just turns into some kind of public voting situation, it's a BBOTT-style game, then it's just going to be whoever has, like, the most obnoxious and largest fan base. And if you thought Big Brother Twitter was bad right now, imagine when it's, like, these diehard fans of washed-up celebrities just going at it on Twitter, trying to go to bat for their person.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, I do think it is going to be shortened. I think we're probably going to see it premiere in the like January, February-ish slot, possibly into March, sort of leading up to Survivor. So I think it is going to be shortened. But you bring up a great, you know, point about the format of the show. Are we going to see something that is more akin to Celebrity Big Brother in the UK or BBOTT, which, oh my goodness, as somebody who was a hardcore lurker before I sort of jumped into all this nonsense with So You Think You Can Podcast, like I came up in this Twitter world of BBOTT and it was a complete disaster. Like we're talking fire in the streets, dumpster fire, hot mess. And I could see that again if, you know, Big Brother Celebrity decides to go this public voting route.
I think they almost definitely will. And again, I completely avoided BBOTT and I'm very glad that I did that. But I really can't imagine it's going to be, unless they really do get like the Frankie Grandes and Nikki Grahams who literally like have played the game before or are mentally prepared to do that kind of thing. Like I really don't see like celebrities like nominating each other and voting each other out. It's got to be America voting, right?
Well, so if they do end up taking a BBOTT route, which I don't blame you for not watching, it was you had the audience would vote on specific gameplay elements that were introduced, so care packages and things like that. There was somebody who was America's nominee, but the HOH still did nominate people, and the House is the ones who voted. Like, ultimately, oh, okay. I think the U.S. maybe got one vote. So you still had, like, the people who had agency were still the game players. Like, it wasn't America that was voting to evict. So we could see something along those lines where it's sort of walking this line between having America vote but still having influence over the game.
Maybe it'll be that way. I really wouldn't be surprised if it's these people don't have to turn on each other really at all. They're just in there to be entertaining.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. And I think the fact that, again, trying to put myself in production's shoes, you want people to interact with the show. And, you know, that's why we have the hashtags, tweet at us, you know, we're going to put your tweets on the show, which, oh my goodness, that was like the thing in the RHAP community this season was like, we're all going to try and get tweets on the show. So my timeline was just nothing but generic tweets of like, yay, Christmas. So I'm really happy that that's over. But
thank
anyway.
God for the mute function on Twitter, by the way.
Oh my goodness.
Apropos of nothing, just saying.
Yeah, right. No, oh my gosh, so useful. But anyway, so I could definitely see, you know, some sort of them wanting the interaction with the fans, and doing votes like this is a way to encourage that.
Yeah. So any people that you I know we've talked about, maybe Jenna Fischer, probably not, and probably Frankie Grande, if we're being honest. Who do we know of that, like, realistically might be there? Like, the Bobby Moynihans or other people like that that we know are potentially willing and famous enough to do this.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, again, you know, to use the word celebrity loosely, right? I mean, there's discussion of, yeah, I mean, maybe somebody who actually watches the show like Bobby Moynihan or Matt Eisman, who did The Celebrity Apprentice. So, it's not too far-fetched that we might get people like that. But I just have to think that there is a little bit of this stigma on Big Brother of, you know, being a little trashier, even I don't want to say even more than The Celebrity Apprentice given everything, but I think that there is going to be some hesitation from quote unquote real celebrities, and I do think we're going to end up with a little bit more along the lines of VH1, maybe not as bad as like VH1, but that's probably where we're leaning. Like, I'm telling you, there's going to be at least 3 YouTubers on this season.
Okay, and they're going to be like some Real Housewives if they're lucky.
Yeah, I could see like a Real Housewife if they're lucky, right? I mean, that's like what we're talking about as far as the caliber of people. Okay. Maybe some people from the challenge. That's the sense that I get. Now, obviously, I don't know for sure, and we'll see as talks are continuing. But there seems to be a lot of interest, again, from who, right? From what washed up celebrities. So we'll see ultimately how it all unfolds.
Okay, Dom, are you excited for BB Celebrity?
Oh, I can't wait. I've got my calendar here. I'm counting down the days. I'm just on the edge of my seat.
As someone who loves all things, well, it's just like, so excited.
A quick behind the curtains note. Like he said, let's make sure we leave a little extra time to talk about BB Celebrity. So I didn't know if he had like something he was like dying to talk about for a bit.
Yeah, well, I wanted to just ask how it's going to work, given that it's such an obviously flawed concept in so many ways. I feel like we covered that in some detail, okay. So I'm all good.
All right, fair. Well, I guess then, is there anything else that either of you guys wanted to get to while we're still here?
Big Brother related?
Yeah, or whatever. Did you like the Survivor premiere? We should ask you that. I guess don't ask. People can go and find out your Survivor takes over on your own Survivor podcast.
That's right. Well, yeah, we actually really didn't talk about the episode all that much, although, you know, we're going to start including our own thoughts. It was certainly rushed. Like I remember, I think Andy Denhart tweeted something along these lines, or maybe it was Redmond. I don't remember, but it was something of like halfway through the episode. I was like, I have no idea what's going on. It's like, that's exactly how I feel. I have no idea what's going on. I've, you know, rewatched the episode. I'm such a weirdo. I've rewatched it twice now. So, it feels a little bit more cohesive once I rewatched it, but certainly from the onset, it's like you have Alan with his bug eyes telling JP to take his pants off, or actually JP just strips on his own, which like, that was really impressive. So on the RHAP B&B, which is the new show I'm doing with the wonderful Mike Bloom on reality TV wrap-ups, but we gave out a hero and hustler healer award like to who best exemplifies those characteristics. I'm telling you, Alan is a hustler. Like he got the man to take his pants off with like, I mean, maybe seemingly some prompting, but still very impressive.
You sound jealous.
I don't know what gave you that idea.
All right. Well, Liana, you are on Twitter at Liana Boris.
Yes, that's right. Correct. Yes. LianaBoraas.
Very good. You, of course, can be checking her out on the RHAP B&B. Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. I suppose you could email us any of your thoughts on Big Brother, any other things you want to have us talk about potentially on the podcast. We are domandcolin@gmail.com. Liana, thank you so much once again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. You know, again, when I first got your message about talking Big Brother, I was like, uh-oh, do I really want to talk about this again? But no, it's always wonderful talking with the both of you. I really have enjoyed all of the coverage that you've been putting out, you know, sort of branching out a little bit. And it's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Dom, anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
No, just to echo what Colin said, thank you again for coming on. It's always a ton of fun. And that will conclude our brief foray into Big Brother 19 for at least one more year.
May we never speak of it again. All right. So I guess that's going to do it. Thank you guys very much for listening this far. And until next time, I'm sure we'll talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.